Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
And it is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location. Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. ToyotaofHollywood.com, Joe.
All right, Woody. We're going to go to, I think, one of the fairest guys that we have that cover the Miami Dolphins. Matter of fact, I hear it from everybody. And right now, there's a lot of media and fan frustration, even months after the season, with this team like I can't remember in a long, long time, as Kyle Krabs from Locked on Fins podcast joins us. Kyle, and that was a compliment. You've done a good job of staying fair and not letting the personal stuff get involved. But it has been a little frustrating, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a really fun time to cover the team. And everybody is fed up. And look, like, I grew up a fan of Dolphins, and you know, I'm frustrated with what the build has and has not produced over the course of the past several years. But you know, I think when you commit to a really ambitious overhaul, and then it becomes clear you don't have all the right people in place. So halfway through what's supposed to be the peak years of that, you make a head coaching change, and in some ways have to go back to square one, and then that coach has some growing pains because he's a first-time coach, and then you don't necessarily see improvement in that front. But then, like, the standard life cycle of a team from when you start a build to when you have to make some hard decisions and have to go through some transitions, it's 6, 7, 8 years, and here we are. And yeah, you know, it's just an unfortunate set of circumstances and timing that I know everybody is not happy with, and I'm sure they're not happy with, and anybody who roots for the team's not happy with.
Yeah, no, very well put. Very, very well put. So you've seen what we've done in free agency to kind of cover up at least whether it's good enough or quality enough will be seen, but we'll find out down the road here. But we still, I think, and tell me if you're in this order, cornerback, guard, defensive tackle and safety still need to be priority on this team, or would you put somebody else in that list or in a different order?
I'd probably put them in a little bit of a different order, just because if you played a game tomorrow, you don't have the bodies to get you through a defensive tackle. So that's one where I think you'd need, and it feels like maybe there's some eggs in a Calais Campbell basket that they're maybe waiting on a decision for. The list of guys who have played extensive football last year at that position is pretty lean. So I think that's the one where I get the most, like, ants on my skin type anxiety looking at that group and seeing what's out there. If you don't bring back Calais Campbell, or at least at corner, I think Kader Kohou last year showcased some more ability to play outside. He, for the first time in his career, is playing in the same scheme in back-to-back seasons. I think that'll be helpful for him. And then you do have a lot of young guys. Now, I don't know how much you trust those young guys, but like, I even go back to the preseason last year with Jason Maitre and Isaiah Johnson, a couple other UDFA corners who flashed in the preseason. You don't want to bank on those guys to start for you, but at least you have some young competition there and you have a lot of bodies. Where at defensive tackle, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, man, like, we couldn't field it on front if we wanted to without putting Bradley Chubb down there at the 4-I or playing on the nose.
Yeah. I want to ask you something a little bit away from. We were just talking about this. So about guys being on time and whose job is it, and whether it's stretching or getting ready for practice or going to a meeting, whatever, it's all important, I think, and I'm talking as a guy in his 60s, so it was more important to me because I saw how important it was to the culture that we had at the time with Don Shula, and all the guys were doing it. Every guy was on time. Didn't matter if you were all pro or lucky to be on the team, Everybody was there. I don't think we talk about Teron and Calais and their importance to the team. I still don't think it's their job, and Omar disagrees with me on this from yesterday. I don't think it's Calais and Teron's job to make sure other veteran guys are on time. For any of that stuff that the coach says, you got to be here for special teams, you got to be here for meetings with your group, with your individual group that you meet with, or offensive meetings or defensive meetings or stretching, it's not their job. Do you agree with that, or you think it is their job as the leaders and veterans on the team?
So, and everybody has a little bit of a different opinion here, and I understand the different perspectives. And today's athletes it's a little different ballgame than playing for Coach Shula, right? Like,
yes.
A lot of the stuff that, like, Coach Shula and Coach
Belichick. It's a bad example. Agree. It's a bad example, yeah.
And that's why I pulled in Belichick, too, because he's even more recent, and it was, like, the same stuff where it's not flying in today's game. At the end of the day, though, like, from my perspective, you're accountable for yourself. Now, you have leaders on the team that, help set the tone and set the climate. But do I expect Teron Armstead to go chase down hypothetically Tyreek Hill and say, hey man, you gotta get here 15 minutes early? Like, no.
No, they're not gonna do that. I agree.
And if an individual player is not accountable for their own obligations, the next place that goes for me is the head coach of the team to then put something in place that is going to deter that negative behavior. And I don't think we saw that, because Mike said at the end of the year last year, well, we had guys that were repeat offenders and they got fined and it didn't change anything. Then you got to do something else. So somebody's going to have to walk through the door 15 minutes late and you're going to say, okay, go pack your stuff, you're out of here. And that's what the old school way is to do it. But I think that's a great way to get somebody's attention to say, look, you just can't keep rolling in here 15 minutes late and shrug your shoulders.
But if that guy's really good, and he's really good on Sundays, no matter what you get Thursday, Friday, Wednesday, you're going to put up with it, right, in today's game, most likely? You're going to put up with it if the guy's really good.
I think everybody has a limit past a certain point, and that's the question for the Dolphins this offseason is, what's your limit? How much are you willing to tolerate? And I hope they find that limit, because it's not – you're not going to achieve the kind of culture changes you're talking about instilling if you can continue to tolerate this because the guy's past a certain skill level.
Yeah. It's so this whole thing is you think this affects the culture even in today's game? You think it does, or guys only care about how you play with on Sunday, don't read into everything else, it really doesn't matter?
I think it's hard for me to just assume that everybody puts the blinders on and it's the 60 minutes between the lines is the only thing that's relevant for these guys, and that influence doesn't exist in other ways. So it's not an easy answer to have, and there's people who have different opinions for what that looks like. But just from my perspective, like, I've got a really hard time believing, and I'm sure the players are that way too, when they reflect on what last season was like and what we've heard and the things, Lord knows what we haven't heard about what it was like last season.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you could ask certain players, and certain players would tell you, as long as you're ready to do the things we need you to do on Sundays and execute on the field, whatever else is your business. And I would bet there's other guys that probably feel some kind of way about the rest of the stuff that comes along with it too.
I just like to see everybody buy in just once and see how this thing looks. Just not worrying about that part of it, knowing everybody, and we don't, if you can practice, you practice, so you have good timing and all the things that popped up last year. Would just be nice to do away with those things. I want to ask you about that cornerback position. Baldy said something yesterday. Brian Baldinger said, if you're going to get a cornerback, probably need to go in the first round and grab one if you really want one, because a lot of those guys seem to start. They come right in the league and can start for you and bump and run or play in zone. Probably the best time to do it if that's a big need and you don't feel good about that position, maybe more so than other positions, because he thinks there's a lot of defensive tackles and a lot of guards. What do you think?
If I had to put in order how deep those three positions I think are for options that you feel good about, I would say defensive tackle is the deepest. I would say cornerback, it's interesting because I think if you get into skill-specific type stuff, I might give it to cornerback as far as you have guys that are nickels, you have guys that are man corners, you have guys that are zone corners, but they have limitations that prevent them from being an all-around corner. I think there's a few more all-around interior offensive linemen that you can grab. So I could flip a coin with that one and not feel super obligated to answer one way or another, but I would say to Baldy's point, the guys at the top of the draft, there's really only a handful of guys that are well regarded as universal corners that no matter what kind of concept you want to run, they're going to be able to run it. And that shelf life for those guys being available is going to be really short.
We, as you know, have a first, second, and third round, 2 4s and 2 5s. Boy, you got to hit all those. You got to pepper all those, right? Guard, you're still on the guard kick, right? Still, let's get a young guard here and give him a chance to start. You with me on that right away?
I would like to sign another veteran player that has some starting experience, and then I would like to, at some point, draft a player, whether it's a college tackle or a college guard, who has some versatility. And I think if you got two more pieces. I know everybody's, wanting to eject certain players off the roster already because they're back on a one-year deal or whatever, but I think if you get that amount of competition, you should position yourself to be okay and then have enough depth, and then theoretically, maybe you can stay healthier at one of your tackle spots, whether it's right tackle after Austin missed half the season or Teron coming in out of games down the stretch because he's fighting through his knee issues, whatever that looks like, if they transition away from Teron or if Teron retires or whatever that looks like. You're getting Keon Smith back, who I'm a big fan of his game as a developmental-type tackle as well. I think you can get a group of 1 through 9 that you feel good about, but one of them needs to be a player on a rookie contract, and ideally one of them is a player who's started in the NFL before.
So you were talking about Eichenberg a little bit. Where does Eichenberg fit in for you in the big picture? I agree he's going to be on the roster, but the question is, does he come in September? Is he starting, or is he just backing up inside?
I would really love to think we get to a point where Liam maybe takes the roster spot of Andrew Meyer, who they carried on the 53 last year, who they seem to like as an undrafted free agent rookie. With having center capabilities, but then also can play guard and has starting experience. If that's your 9th offensive lineman, you're doing okay, right? So it's a question of, I'm a bigger fan of Larry Borum's interior offensive line film, his film at guard. I think he's a compelling name to be a part of an open competition, but you don't want to just give it to him in the same way you wouldn't just want to give it to a rookie or anybody else that you signed. So, I think that's probably, for me, if Liam Eichenberg is offensive lineman 8 or 9 on the depth chart, I think that's probably an appropriate place for him to be. And realistically, Joe, that's probably what he should have been in 2023 before Isaiah Wynn went down and Connor Williams went down and Robert Hunt went down and you played half the season with 4 backups on your offensive line that year.
Yeah, that was a rough one. So I want to ask you, how do you feel with Ifeatu and Ashton potentially being starting safeties? Do you need more, or could you, and forget their health, that's the remains to be seen, but as healthy players, are is that good enough to be your 2 starting safeties?
I would feel good about that duo if it was your 2nd and 3rd players in the room. So whether that's a veteran guy who we saw a couple of veteran guys last year who were available that went for friendlier price points at the safety market, but you maybe have to wait until the summertime to sign them, or whether that's a young guy in the draft. I think it's a deep safety room. There's a number of players that I would like. I think you're just missing the player who I think can really tie it all together at the top of that room. But I like Mel Afonwu, and I like Ashton Davis if they're safety 2 and safety 3 for you. I think that's a a nice complement of skills for those two guys in particular.
So let me ask you, in a perfect world, since you've been studying this and doing a lot with the draft, what would you take with 13 if they stay with it, which there's no guarantee he's going to stick with that. But if he does, what would you take at 13?
I think you have a really good opportunity to get a defensive back, whether that's Will Johnson from Michigan or Jahdae Barron from Texas, who can play inside and outside. I think they'd probably love to have more versatility when you saw how exotic they kind of got down the stretch with a lot of their safety rotations and covered shells and guys ending in different places than when they started. Barron's a really good tackler. He's very physical. I think he's somebody who gives you a lot of interchangeability at corner that I'm a big fan of. I think you could maybe make an argument for a safety at that spot, whether that's Nicky Minwori from South Carolina, who blew up the combine, who could maybe give you some, not saying he's Kyle Hamilton because I don't think he's Kyle Hamilton from an instincts perspective, but as far as just the athleticism and the athletic profile at that size is pretty rare. You could theoretically go defensive tackle if you have Kenneth Grant from Michigan there. I think he can be a snap eater who, 330-plus pounds, has a lot of upside on passing downs and obviously gives you a lot of appeal in the run game. You could go I'm leaning away from Tyler Warren, the tight end from Penn State now, even though I think he'd be a great fit, just because I think that position, the depth of it, in addition to what they added in Pharaoh Brown, who I really like as just an inline blocker, if he's going to take the Julian Hill and Durham Smythe snaps, and obviously you have Jonnu Smith, I think you can work with that and then invest that pick in something else. So that's kind of a starting point, at least, for what you could do at 13.
I like you started with cornerbacks. I caught that. You started with the cornerback position, and I like that a lot. Hey, Kyle, thank you, man. Appreciate you coming on just a little bit. Just trying to get an idea, man, what's going on, and make sure you're still on the same page with everything and the frustration. We're just trying to calm down the frustration here a little bit before we get to this draft. Thank you.
Yeah, I get it. But, you know, it's one of those things where I think everybody kind of talked themselves into they're going to be really aggressive because it's a must-win year. But I think if you looked at where the team and the roster was at, this being a little bit more of a – and they brought in a lot of young guys, which I appreciate. They brought in a lot of young guys that are probably – they're coming off rookie contracts. They're hungry. I'm not saying it's going to work or promising that it's going to work or anything like that, but I like that element of what they did. A lot of the guys that they added have a physicality element at some positions that I think you were sorely missing it last year. And from a life cycle of the team perspective, this is a juncture that makes sense to be more focused on adding talent through the draft with rookie contracts. And I think you're seeing that with how they tackle free agency in the first wave.
Yeah. No, good stuff. As always, thank you so much, Kyle.
Of course, yeah.
All right, Kyle Krabs, Locked On Fence podcast, joining us this morning to talk a little bit. We're about 36 minutes away from Ron Rothstein to talk former Heat head coach and talk to him a little bit about what's going on. If you haven't heard Spo, man, we're going to have that for you. Pretty much said it all where his team is after their eighth straight loss last night at Madison Square Garden after having a lead at the half and just getting blown out in the third quarter of that game. Hey, right now I want to tell you about Jeff, Amanda at Beverly's Jewelers. By the way, Jeff and Amanda, you go, husband, wife? No, that would be father, daughter. And boy, I'll tell you what, Beverly's been around a long time because I've been around a long time going there. I've been going there more than 30 years. Incredible offer for you right now for people thinking about getting engaged. Thinking about getting engaged and looking for something real special. They got something special. You can get a stunning 3-carat certified lab-grown diamond, VVS Clarity e-color set in a custom-made 14-carat diamond ring for just $3,999. Choose from all shapes and larger sizes available at similar savings, but hurry. This deal is not going to last for a long, long time. Jeff has made it clear. I can only do it so long, plus gold prices are at an all-time high. Beverly's is paying top dollar for your gold, your silver, diamonds, and jewelry with immediate payment. Man, I trust Beverly's Jewelers for any occasion, birthdays, anniversaries, and especially the diamond engagement ring or just upgrading a ring for somebody that's been with you through the good times and the bad times. Thank you, Mrs. Rose. In Fort Lauderdale or online at BevJewelers.com, Beverly's Jewelers, where South Florida gets engaged.